I am going to tell you the story of where the teddy bear came from. Your bear, my bear, every bear that ever sat on the edge of a child's bed. It is an American story, and it is a true one. More than 100 years ago, the man who lived in the White House was named Theodore Roosevelt. Most people called him Teddy, although he did not much care for that name himself. He was a big man with a big voice and round spectacles. His laugh could fill a room and spill right out the windows. He liked books. He liked horses. He liked the woods better than he liked the city. He had been a cowboy out west, and a soldier, and a writer of books about birds. Now he was the President of the United States. But put him in a forest, and he was happy as a boy. One November, Mr. Roosevelt went down to Mississippi for a bear hunt. The governor of Mississippi had invited him, and the president said yes. Mississippi in November is a quiet place. The leaves are wet on the ground. The river fog comes in low and lazy. The woods smell of mud and moss and old oak. The man who led the hunt was named Holt Collier. And Holt Collier had been born enslaved long before. He had lived through hard things you will learn about when you are older, and he had grown up to become one of the finest hunters in all of America. He knew the Mississippi woods the way you know your own bedroom. He could read a track in the mud the way you read a picture book. He had a pack of hounds, and he loved them like family, and they loved him right back. The president was glad to be in Mr. Collier's woods. He had brought his rifle. He had brought his boots. He was ready. But the hunt was hard. Days went by. Mr. Collier's hounds nosed the trails. The men walked and walked. They drank cold coffee. They sat by little fires at night, and they did not see a single bear. Not one. Not a track. Not a sound. Mr. Roosevelt was not used to that. He was used to going out and finding what he came to find. But the bears of the Mississippi Delta knew their own woods better than anyone, and they had stayed away. On the fifth day, something changed. The hounds caught a scent. They lifted their heads, and they bayed that long, deep dog song that hunters know, and they were off through the trees. Mr. Collier ran after them. The other men ran. The whole wood seemed to wake up at once. When Mr. Collier caught up to his dogs, they had cornered an old black bear in a little watering hole. The bear was old, and the bear was tired, and the bear was big. The dogs and the bear fought in the cold water, splashing and snarling. One of Mr. Collier's favorite hounds was killed in the fight. Mr. Collier loved that dog. He had raised that dog from a pup, and now the dog was gone. He was angry, and he was sad, and the bear was hurt and could not run any more. The president was not there yet. He was still coming up through the trees, far behind. And Mr. Collier did not know what to do with a hurt bear and a tired pack of hounds and the President of the United States on the way. So he did what a good guy does. He stopped the fight. He tied the old bear to a willow tree so it could not hurt anyone else and the dogs could not hurt it. And he sent word for the president to come quick. Mr. Roosevelt came up through the trees, breathing hard. The other men were already there, pointing. "There," they said. "There is your bear, Mr. President." Mr. Roosevelt looked at the bear by the willow tree. The bear looked back at him. It was an old bear. It was a tired bear. It was tied. It could not run. It could not fight. It was, in every way, beaten already. And Mr. Roosevelt lowered his rifle. "No," he said. "No," he said again. "It would not be fair," he said. "A hunter gives an animal a chance. This bear has no chance. I will not shoot it." The woods were very quiet for a moment. The hounds were panting. The men were still. The old bear was too hurt to live, and someone else, quietly, ended its pain. But the president himself would not raise his gun to a tied-up animal. He would not. And the hunt was over. And so the story traveled, first to a newspaper. In Washington, there was a cartoonist named Clifford Berryman who drew the news in pictures for the Washington Post. When he heard the story of the president and the bear, he picked up his pen. He drew Mr. Roosevelt in his big coat, with his back turned and his hand raised. And he drew the bear. Only Mr. Berryman did not draw an old, hurt bear. He drew a small, soft, frightened cub looking up. Underneath, he wrote the caption, "Drawing the Line in Mississippi." The cartoon ran on the 16th of November, 1902, and then it ran everywhere. Other newspapers copied it. People cut it out and pinned it up. Children pointed at the little bear and asked their parents about him. The whole country, it seemed, fell in love with that small cartoon cub. And that is when the story traveled to a candy shop in Brooklyn. Brooklyn, New York, was a city of newcomers in those days. People had come from all over the world, from Poland and Russia and Italy. They were looking for a country where they could open a shop and raise their children and sleep at night without being afraid. Morris and Rose Mictum were two of those newcomers. They had come from far away, across the ocean. They had opened a small shop in Brooklyn that sold candy and little trinkets and toys. They worked long days. They were kind to their neighbors. They were saving up. And Rose... Oh, Rose could sew. She had the kind of hands that could make a piece of cloth become anything at all. When Rose saw the cartoon in the newspaper, she sat down at her kitchen table, and she thought. And then she got out her sewing basket. That night, by lamplight, Rose Mictum made a little bear. She made him out of the softest brown cloth she could find. She gave him movable arms and movable legs so a child could pose him. She gave him two shiny black button eyes. She stitched his nose with dark thread. And when she was done, the little bear sat up in her hands like a friend. The next morning, the Mictums set the bear in their shop window. They put the newspaper cartoon beside him. And above him, in careful handwriting, they put a small sign. Teddy's bear. The bear sold before lunchtime, so Rose sewed another. That one sold too. Then another, and another, and another. People came from blocks away. People who had never been in the shop before. People with children, and people without children, and people who just wanted that bear. Morris Mictum, being a careful and polite man, sat down and wrote a letter to the President of the United States. "Dear Mr. Roosevelt," the letter said, "please, sir, may we use your name on our little bear?" And Mr. Roosevelt, who was a fond and funny man, wrote back. Nobody saved the original letter, which is a shame, but by all accounts he said something like this: "I doubt my name is worth much in the toy bear business, but you are welcome to it." So they used it. And the bear was Teddy's bear forever after. Just Teddy. Just the bear. The Mictums could not keep up. They sold their bears to big stores. They built a company called Ideal, and Ideal became one of the biggest toy companies in America for the next 100 years. And ever since then, somewhere in this country, somewhere in the world, a small child is holding a small brown bear snug against a small chest, a soft brown bear with shiny eyes and a stitched nose. The same bear that started with a tired old animal in a Mississippi swamp, and a president who would not raise his gun, and a woman with a needle working by lamplight.